You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
This is Edge Radio.
The Dice Men Cometh.
Well, 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 well. Welcome to The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Now, Mark and Leon.
Hello.
You might not have noticed, but I wasn't here last week.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We didn't notice at all. The show went absolutely flawless.
I hear it was seamless.
Yep.
Except for the bits where the, like, the songs and the talking.
Yeah, that was all that bit, and all the people that listen to the podcast, you have no idea what I had to edit out. So what you heard, that was the best stuff.
So I've realised how much you guys need me.
That's one way of saying it.
So I'm not going to go on any holidays for a little while.
Really?
Lies. I didn't know Andrew Garfield designed Bunny Kingdom and Magic. Mark, I didn't know you were part Taiwanese with your excellent description of the designer of Tulip Bubble.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So guys.
Everyone, Michael Jordan missed a shot from time to time.
Yeah, he did.
He just never buggered up a radio show so
but
badly.
We've been going for what? How many? 180-odd episodes?
Oh, I think is what right? I said, yeah. Something
it's
like that.
It's episode 220 this evening.
That's much better, guys. Now, well done in that. So hopefully this week we'll go a little bit more to plan. And, of course, for those of you who are just listening for the very first time, out of 220, where the Dice Men Cometh, this is a show all about board games and card games and dice games and role-playing games. And all kinds of other games that are fun to play by yourself or with others. We are very lucky to be sponsored by Area 52, which is Hobart's number one pop culture radio show supporting board game store.
Yes,
that's us.
They're the words.
And they sell stuff including games and comics and mangas and Funkos and normal books and pencils. And what they don't sell? Themed alarm clocks, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you looked?
I did look, and I went in and spoke to the proprietor of the said store because my kids had a little R2-D2 themed alarm clock, and every morning at 7 o'clock it would make some R2-D2 noises, and the time would project out through a laser onto the roof, and somehow it got thrown across the room. Kids being kids. Doesn't work anymore. But anyway,
was it the kids that did it?
It was the kids that did it.
Take
it was certainly not the grown-ups that did it because that's just not the kind of parents that we are.
No, if you say so.
So look, what have we got on this week, lads?
Oh, you tell me. This is normally your bit.
All right. Well, what we do have on is two what we've been playing. So, Leon, you are going to kickstart us off.
Yes. No with, Kickstarter.
No?
No.
With one of the games that we played. Are we saying Bordercon still? Or
we're
we
still already saying it for the time being.
Okay, yeah. We haven't gone
we
to
haven't worn it out yet, yeah.
And then, Mark, you're going to continue the Bordercon theme because we're going to discuss what each of our top fives and potentially bottom fives were.
Yeah.
And then I've got a little what we've been playing as well, and we'll see how much time we've got left. Presumably there will be none.
Possibly.
And then before you go, for anyone listening live who happens to be in and around the Sydney area, not quite this time tomorrow night, but getting towards 11 o'clock, Mark will be landing in sunny Sydney for 48 hours of non-stop gaming at LFG.
It won't be very sunny at 11 o'clock tomorrow night, Garth. That's
well,
sure.
You don't know Sydney as well as I do.
You might brighten up the demeanour of the place. It's hard to say.
Oh, yes.
So, you're looking forward to LFG?
I am. I'm really looking forward to catching up with a good friend, Renee, who I think is going to be demoing some Mayfair games, catching up with Charles, of course, who's running LFG, and I'm catching up with a couple of listeners, actually, that have even reached out to contact me.
Make sure you wear your gaming underpants.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have my best Dice Man hoodie on and maybe even some custom dice.
Oh, yes, but look, we better throw to a song, and then when we come back, if you want to know the best game about libraries, Leon will tell you all about it. But we are the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We'll be back after this song.
You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM here with the Dice Men Cometh, and that was Diet Sig Barf Day. Not the type of barf you have with water.
You never know.
And Barf Day, that reminds me of Bordercon.
Hey! That was your Saturday morning, wasn't it?
That was hilarious. Did we already talk about how that was one of my highlights of BorderCon?
We did. We don't need to mention it again. Leon.
Yes.
One of the games we were playing at BorderCon?
That is extra grammars there, Marksy boys. Right, so, you know how we always go on? There are certain themes. These days, there's a lot of games set on Mars. There's a lot of games that have Vikings involved. And for years, obviously, things like the zombie theme had been done to death. Get it?
Hey!
But there was one theme that every other TV show, every other movie, every other book, every other song in the world was based off this theme, but they never made a board game about it. And of course I'm talking, you all know, about gnomish librarians. Because they're burning up the pop charts all the time with songs about gnomish librarians. But yes, that's what this game is about. So hold on to your socks. So the game is called Ex Libris.
Do gnomes wear socks?
Possibly. It's hard. Would they have to
only with sandals.
Would they have to be pointy like the shoes? Would the socks have to point around?
I think we should just call this whole board game discussion off and
get on to that.
Just do that, yeah.
Possibly, either way. But it's by Renegade Games, who have just been smashing it out of the park these last few years. They've been getting bigger and bigger over these last few years. So Asmodee, watch out, or you'll have to buy them out soon.
Mm.
Which I'm sure they probably have already thought about anyway. And it is designed by Adam P. McGaver.
Oh, it's been MacGyvered.
Well, yes. I think it's McIver, technically, but I'm saying McGaver because I want to. So,
enjoy of having your own radio show. You can say what you want, how you want to say it.
That is true. We're just not allowed to do the swears. Mark.
What? Who, me?
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, in Ex Libris.
You, Leon.
Yeah. Ex Libris, that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
You are a collector of rare and valuable books in a thriving fantasy town, and the mayor has just announced a new seat in the village council. Grand Librarian.
Woohoo!
Yes. It is a lucrative position, and you'll be awarded to the citizen with the most extraordinary library. Unfortunately, several of your book collecting colleagues, or more like acquaintances, are also candidates for this award.
Mm.
So to outshine your competition, you will need to expand your personal library by sending your trusty assistants out into the village to find the most impressive tomes. But sourcing these books can be rather scarce. You only have a few days before the mayor's official inspector comes to judge your library. So be sure for your assistants to have all your books shelved in time. But she's a tough cookie. She will use her official inspection form, which you do actually get with this game. It is a laminated bit of cardboard, and you use that for the final scoring, which is brilliant, by the way.
You have to fill it out in triplicates.
You do, and you have to tick off certain things once they are done. Either way, what she is looking at is for certain criteria in your library. It needs to be in alphabetical order, shelf stability. You need to have some prominent works, but you need to have some variety in there as well. And she will not turn a blind eye if you've got any of the council's banned books. Ooh. There are certain books they don't want in this village, which, you know, I would argue every book has a right to be read, but, you know, these, you know what these gnomish people are like? Oh, that's racist. I won't say that again. So, yes, anyway, all this, and you might need a little bit of cunning tactics and a little bit of magic to surpass your opponents and become the Grand Librarian.
Wow.
So doesn't that sound like the bestest thing everest?
Yes,
it does.
Lovely
bit
of dead air for a second. Edit point. So, it is a game for...
Hold on, we'll do it again. Yeah!
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That's not going to change.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it's between 1 to 4 players, so you can play this solo if you wish, but I have not, because... I haven't. It's for ages 10 and up. I'd argue probably a bit low there, but 12 and up or so, just to get the theme of this kind of to wrap around the head.
Mm-hmm.
Playtime, it says on the box, between 45 to 60. Once you know the game, yep, that's completely reasonable.
Yeah.
Yep. So, what this game is all about, and I'll explain this to you the way I've actually taught this game once I was taught it originally myself, just the way that the end game scoring works, because that's kind of the way that the rest of the game kind of unfolds.
And why are you putting on your gnome hat? Is that... part of the teaching experience?
You leave my gnome hat out of this.
Okay.
Either way, so alphabetical order. So what you'll actually be doing in this game is you have a hand of cards which has no hand limit, which is very important for this game, because if you get rubbish cards, you can just keep them to the end of the game. It don't matter, but it does mean you can stop other people from having them, or you could maybe use them later on. So what you're trying to do is building, it's not necessarily a library, but more like a bookshelf. And it's three different shelves you can have on this bookshelf. But what you need to do is you need to try and keep it in alphabetical order. An alphabetical order from the start to the finish. Every shelf is not a different alphabet. They are all from the top left to the bottom right corner, all need to be in alphabetical order. You can put other stuff in there that isn't in order, but at the end of the game, those cards will be flipped over and they won't score you any points.
Richard's paying attention.
Yes, Richard, did you hear that?
Yeah. I think Richard just screamed out in agony.
Yes.
Did he sleep in the bath?
Anyway. God bless you. We love you.
Do you know?
Yes.
At some point during my youth, I'd learnt to say the alphabet backwards.
Really?
And, like, I can still partially do it.
Mm.
But when I had that sort of, I don't know, how many weeks and months.
Skill, yeah.
I would start saying the alphabet the right way, get to about LMNOP, and then start going back towards A again.
Right.
So I sort of did the whole alphabet.
Can you do it now?
I can do ZYXWVUTSRQPLNMLKJRHDFEDCBA.
Still. And you have been drinking.
There you go.
That is rather impressive, so well done.
Probably can't do it forwards, though.
No, I doubt it. Which is something you have to do a billion times in this game.
Richard.
Although it is written on everyone's character's little sideboard, which people keep pointing out to me.
The alphabet is.
Yes. And I go, I don't care. I'd like to do it in my head to remind me what comes after things. Because it's good to refresh your brain.
And you're singing it in the song. That's the key.
No, I don't think I was, actually. I think it was just... No, I don't have time for that. There's tactics in this game.
Well, here's the thing. What it would be very good for is people whose first language isn't English, and in fact, first language doesn't even contain those letters.
Yeah.
Perhaps if they wanted to play the game in English, that'd be a very handy thing to have.
So on these cards, there's the letters that the books represent, but there's also numbers as well, because there's not just the one C in the whole deck, because there's a deck of like 200 or more cards. And there's things like C, 1 to 10. So it has to be in alphabetical order as well as numerical order as well. Another way to score some points is your shelf stability. And that is just basically your different blocks on your shelf. So the more books you have in line together, the more points you will score.
You want to ideally end up with a rectangle shape after you've got the three shelves of your cards. You want them all to be equal number of cards, all on top of each other.
Well, if you had a shelf that had five, then a shelf that had three, then a shelf that had five, when you come to that final scoring, my understanding is, you'd only score three by three, wouldn't you? Because you only count as far as where that stability where it's level all the way through.
The biggest solid section of your shelves is what you're going to score. Then you're also going to prominent works. There's six different kinds of books you're going after in this. And genres? They range from different things. They are corrupted codices, which is very metal. There is the monster manuals, also very metal. And then there's things like the fantastical fictions, and then there's the actual historical text. They're all different. They're all different symbols and different colours. So this game is, you're fine if you're colourblind, because there's heaps of different symbols and stuff, so you're pretty cool with that. Prominent works is something that everybody's going after, because the more symbols of those you have on the cards in your library, you could get some points at the end of the game. Then there's the banned books. As I said before, these are the symbols you do not want in your library, because they're going to be worth minus points at the end. Although some cards might have lots of symbols on it that you really want, and a few of those bad ones, you just kind of have to take the fact that you're going to need to take a few negative points to get the positive out of it. The two biggest ways to score in this game is categorical variety. So you need to have a variety of all the different styles of books you can get, except the banned ones. They don't count. But all the other ones, the one you have the least amount of, you will score three times that number at the end of the game. So it is very important that if you try your best to spread out all the different levels, there's a card that goes, that's got none of the stuff I'm looking for, but heaps of stuff on there that I'm not really after. Might get it now because it could come in handy later.
Yeah, because that's the thing is on each card, there's... probably the minimum is two books up
yep,
to...
there's two books up to
three
a,
or
four.
Four
on some
and so
of
they
them.
Could be... some cards will have, say, two of one type of book. Another card might have four different ones. So that card actually represents the four different genres.
And then at the end of it, you've got the library focus, which is the main one you're after. And everyone will get one of these in secret. And this is the... and well, I say secret. It becomes pretty evident very quickly. This is the specific symbol that you are after, because at the end of the game, you will get double the points for every one of them you have in your library. And as we mentioned before, all these cards that you have in your hand, they all have these different books on them. And every single book in this game... well, I said there's 200-odd cards, all of them having at least two books on them. And all the books actually have titles that they have painstakingly come up with, and all of them are really funny and humorous. You can't say them out loud because everyone will know then what letters of cards you've got in your hand. But for instance, as I was going through the rules before I wrote this up, I picked out the first four cards and just thought, what's the best name on each of these four cards? So the four cards I picked up at random, there was Spruce Up Your Torture Chamber, Centaurs Are People Too, Every Cave Has a Silver Mining.
Aww.
And Xenophobic Aerobics. They're just some of the names of the cards.
Very clever.
So they must have spent as long, if not longer, on the titles of those books than designing the game.
So, but how do you actually play the game, Leon? I hear you ask. So what you're going to be doing is the manager of this library is you're going to be sending out assistants. Everybody gets two regular everyday assistants, and you get one special assistant, which is your usual kind of fantasy type character, and they have a special ability. So there's 12 of them to choose from, and when you start the game, you actually do a cool drafting mechanism where you put out double the amount of these characters per player. And the person that's going to be going last in the turn order, they get to pick their character first, and they get to discard a character. So a character that they think, I don't like the sound of their special ability, don't want to deal with that, I'll kick them out of the game. And there's lots of different ones, I won't go through them all, but there's characters like the Sasquatch, who's a pretty chilled kind of guy. He likes to go out and do some work for you, but if somebody else turns up at his location, he's very secretive, he will run back to your player board. So then you get to place him again, which is a pretty cool thing. There's the bookworm, who gets to do some extra work behind you at your library. So you always have a home action where you can draw a card from the deck, or what is called in this game shelving a card, which is where you actually put a card out into your shelf, your library shelf, which is the main thing you'll be doing in this whole game. The bookworm lets you do that even more often. There's the snowman, that anytime you go out to a location, if the snowman's there, no one else can go there because the snowman freezes people out.
Hey,
see?
That's
they're all plays on words, you see. And of course, there's the gelatinous cube.
I love the gelatinous cube.
Everyone loves the gelatinous cube because all these 12 characters are all custom-designed meeples that represent each of those characters. But the gelatinous cube is an actual square gelatinous cube that is very, very cool.
Well, plastic, it's not really gelatinous, but you can see through it.
It was at some point.
Translucent.
Just ruin everything. See if I care.
Yeah, Mark doesn't like theming games.
No, either way. So what you'll be doing is you'll be sending these characters out to various different locations throughout the game. There'll be five of them in the first round. The next round, you will keep one of them and then brought out four new ones. And so every round, there'll be five, then there'll be six, then there'll be seven as it goes along. And ones you've used in previous rounds will still be there. There are things like the Diviner's Hut, where you can just simply draw a card and you take first player, which is very important because the next round, as I said, you're going to have five new things out there. You want to be, some of them only give you one or two positions for your assistants. Mm. You want to get there and get there first. There's things like the Ye Olde book swap, which kind of speaks for itself. You go out, you swap a book with some other cards that are already sitting there.
Which is incredibly important because of the fact that you've got an unlimited size of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
There could just be, you could have a 1, 3, 6, 8, and there's another A there that's going to work for you, and you just swap out this useless D or E that you just have no desire to keep.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very important thing. Things like the Gambler's Den, where you go out there and there's a bit of a kind of, the more people that are out there, different cards get drawn, and whoever guesses the right symbol gets to keep the card, so obviously you're taking a bit of a gamble. There's the Mystery Shack, which you put four cards on face down, and you just go there, say a symbol, turn over the cards, and hope you get some goodness. There's the Yard Sale, which is where you put out heaps of cards from your hand which you don't want anymore, and people can take them, and if they do take them, you get to do some bonus actions.
Right.
They're all of that kind of ilk, all pretty straightforward. Some of them are a bit more complicated than others. You either do the action straight away or you do them at the end of the round, depending on the colour of the board. You will all keep going with this, and depending on the number of players, but I've only ever played this as a four-player game, once somebody gets 12 cards shelved, then you do one more whole round of this, and then once that's done, you will do that scoring, as I said before.
You make that last round sound really quick.
No, it's not.
No, it's really not, hey, Mark.
Well, why are you looking at me?
If you've got AP about it, sure. If you, because as we said before, when you put down the cards, there are several actions that let you move cards in your library around, but there's not many of them.
No.
So it's very important when you place your cards to place them the correct way. Like, I've played this game 3 or 4 times now, and I've never had, I said you can have up to 3 rows of shelves. I've only ever had 2, mainly because I don't want to deal with having a third shelf and making it more complicated than myself. And I have done pretty well with that strategy. Yeah. So once that's done, you will get out, as I said, that laminated cardboard official library inspection form, which is so cool, and it's got a little dry eraser pen with it. You'll score up all the different symbols from everyone's different libraries. You'll check if it's in alphabetical order, do all the scoring, and that's it. That's your game.
Yeah.
And it was my favourite game of Bordercon, and possibly my game of the year so far.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Absolutely love it, and I, from what I've been told, a lot of people out there are in the same kind of boat as me that are big fans of it, and it's one of those games that I know we go on about expansions a lot. That's because, I mean, they're good. But this is a game that's so easily expandable. Just give me more cards.
There's only 20-odd letters in the alphabet. Seriously, what more are they going to do?
Not just that, the characters. You can give me more characters. You can give me more locations. You can, if you want, give me some maybe some rule variety that changes up a few things. But I don't necessarily need that. I just need more characters, more boards, and the rest we can kind of fill our boots with ourselves.
Yes.
Well, Leon, it's not only you that recognises the brilliance in this game, because, of course, it did win one of the Mensa Select Awards, which is rare for these type of games in our hobby.
It's more rare for not Bezier games.
It's more the puzzly type of games. And I guess this game is a puzzle.
Sure is.
It also was nominated in the Golden Geek Awards Best Board Game Artwork and Presentation, and it also won the Best Card Game at Origins this year.
Yes.
Only just recently.
Yeah, and I don't believe it was in the running because of when it came out for all your spiel type stuff. So I think it might be next year's.
Yeah, I think it came out just after the
spiel. Next year's consideration, and I think this could happily fit in quite easily with any of those type of games.
Yeah, when I first saw it, heard about it, I thought, okay, this sounds nice little card game. And then when we were sitting at the table at BorderCon, it's a bloody big box.
Yeah.
It's got a crap load of stuff in it.
Yep.
The quality of the components, the cardboard and the individual meeples for your big boss sort of actions is really, really cool.
Yeah.
And it takes up a hell of a lot of table space.
I was going to say, calling it a card game, I think, is probably, you know, not doing it justice.
No, it takes way too much space.
You've got all those player boards. I mean, look, a couple of things that I loved about it. I love the variety in the player boards and those meeples.
Yep.
I love the variety in the boards that then go out onto the board, onto the table. Sure, there was a couple of them. Being new to the game, you sort of had to read twice to get the gist of
some of those player boards work? Are a bit wordy, but they're not that. But it's one of those things, a couple of players and they won't be that difficult.
But also
that main player board that's out there, how I described this, and I just said to this game before, those five end of game scorings, they're always out there in the middle of the board for everybody to see. And all you need to focus on is, oh, that's right, at the end of the game, I need to focus on this, and this. How many games, Mark, whistle stop, anybody? How many games these days where there are end of game scorings that you get in the middle and you're trying to learn the game, you can completely forget about.
Yep.
Whereas this game, you teach this game by teaching them, this is the five end of game scorings, go for that, and this is how a turn works.
And this is what an alphabet is.
Yeah, exactly. And then it just goes from there, and it's just so simple. And as I said, I mean, it looks amazing. And the price I've seen of this on most retailers, pretty much bang on for me.
Yeah, and you talk about expansions, but the great thing is with all those player boards, all those home boards, all those custom meeples, there's a huge amount of replayability in there already. It's not like you go, oh, yeah, I've seen all the books, I'm bored now after three or four games. I reckon you could play this 20 times before you potentially had seen everything and got a good idea. I had a ball with it, not just because I won the game that we played.
I wasn't in, by the way. Otherwise, I would have.
But his last turn...
How long
do you reckon it went for? Like,
couple minutes.
Without hyperbole, 10 minutes?
Couple of minutes.
Maybe 10 minutes
of
us sitting around the table and Mark debating over one action to do.
Because
he was also the very last player.
Because you've only got those two actions, or I think I had the bookworm, so I had like an extra action on my
home board. Well, you got three actions because you got three assistants.
Yeah. But anyway, so the point is...
Yep.
You guys really liked it.
Yeah, and the theme is actually really good. I mean, it's fantasy building a library. You think, what? How is that? But it comes across.
There's
and
so much satisfaction
with
building a library, and it's so much joy when it's not your turn, just looking down and reading the titles of those books.
Yeah,
those
books
are really, really funny, which just for that little bit of downtime that you do have, it's enjoyable. So it's certainly a thumbs up from this gnome.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm looking forward to play it again, actually.
It's the highest recommendation that I can give at the moment, and I think anybody, younger families or people like us, are old crotchety types, you can't go wrong. I can't imagine playing this with anybody where they would absolutely hate it. Hello, Richard. But that was a different story. But it was awesome.
And am I right in thinking that you either texted or messaged a games company while you were playing it to say, I want one?
Yes, I had purchased this before I had finished probably a third of the game.
There you go. So that's Leon putting his money where his mouth is.
Exactly.
But thanks so much for that, Leon.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mark.
Yes.
We're going to go to a song, and then you get to start us off on what were the highlights and lowlights of BorderCon.
Absolutely.
But before we get to that, thanks, Area 52.
Thank
where
you.
The Dice Men cometh. It is Ed Radio 99.3. And here is a song.
Well, I like to drink.
That was Dark Dunes with Less Than a Lover, a lovely little Tasmanian song there on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh, proudly brought to you this week, as always, by our good friends at Area 52, who I know for a fact, unless they have sold it recently, did have a copy of Ex Libris. So any locals, get in there and snap it up. I'm telling you, it'll be worth every cent. Now, Marky boy, until you go to LFG this weekend and play all the things yet again, we're just going to keep going on about old Bordercon. And you're going to tell us about some of your games you played there.
Yeah, well, we, I guess, in the first episode we had back after Bordercon, we talked about some of our highlights in terms of experiences. Mm-hmm. We talked about some of our disappointments, I think, some of the stranger things. But we never really talked about our top five and our bottom. I don't know if I've got a bottom five, but a bottom few.
Oh, you've got a bottom five, Mike.
Yeah, okay.
Don't you worry about that.
Okay.
You got a bottom ten, son.
So, look. I don't know if anyone picked it up. I'm not going to give mine in any particular order because I found it really hard to pick.
Oh, really?
I don't know that I could go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Wow.
These five games I had
have
a huge
you realized
amount of fun.
That you do this, like, this is a thing you do regularly.
Am I non-committal?
You critique games and you assign maybe not a point system to them, but you do rank them as part of your... As you're part of being a dice man?
If I came up with sort of a criteria, maybe I could make a judgment on them. But just from a gut feel...
I think you did come up with one. We called them the half-arses.
Yes, but not for these games, Garth.
Right,
if I had the time to do that, I would.
Maybe you should have done some research.
All right.
No, keep going. Sounds good.
Well, one of my top five, Leon just spoke about. That's Ex Libris.
Yes.
And I've just said I had an absolute ball with this. If Leon hadn't rushed out and bought it, I think I would have, because I can certainly see my partner Sarah, she loves word games. We've been playing hardback and paperback and that sort of stuff, getting into letters and things. Anyone who's a literature nerd, I think they would love this game.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who likes ordering things, it just scratches those spots. So I'll call that my... number one of five, but not necessarily first.
Well, look, it was on my list too. However, I did assign a numerical value to it. I assigned it number five.
Ooh, very interesting.
So I'm going to tick number five off my list. Actually, I'm going to cross it off.
Okay. Well, I believe I had only had a top three written down.
Oh.
So I will do a bit of improvisation a bit later.
Okay.
Ex Libris was one of them. I'll get that. And yes, it was number one.
Wow.
Bunny Kingdom, we talked about last week in depth.
The Andrew Garfield game.
Yes, the Andrew Garfield, the Spider-Man Andrew Garfield game.
Hang on, are we gonna do one each and go round? Are we gonna? Because that's why.
I've already talked about that, so there's no point in saying it again. But the one I have not talked about, which was on my top three, which probably would be number two, is I played one of those heavy Euro games, guys.
What?
Yeah. And it's the one I've wanted to play for... It ain't new, but it's one I've wanted to always play because out of all those heavy Euro games, it was the one that I thought was the most interesting, and a lot of people said it's kind of the best introductory to your heavy Euro, and that was Le Havre.
Yep.
You were very excited to get this to the table. It's probably one of the first games you had organised for that Saturday, Sunday morning, whenever it was.
Yes, with good friends Melissa and Fraser. We sat down on a Sunday morning. We said, first thing, as soon as you guys get there, let's rock and roll. Because Sunday morning, I think, is kind of a board game, a tradition of Bordercon. Right, Sunday morning, that's a good time. You get your long in, get your long game in now. Because we've had the party the night before, and the night before, Mark, you know this.
Hey.
So we sat down, we played that three-player game of that. It did not overstay its welcome. We played the so-called short game, which is where you start with lots of resources. And as we'll talk about in a game later, it basically just meant we didn't have the first hour of boring stuff.
Sure.
We got straight into it, and it still lasted 2 or 3 hours, but it did not drag at all. And I loved it, and I bought it.
Yeah. There you go.
And it is now in my collection. I now have a heavy Euro in my collection. Woo-hoo! And it is Le Havre.
And do you guys know, so there's a game called The Harbour by Tasty Minstrel, which is a very similar theme. Do you know if there is much similarity between those
two? Well, considering The Harbour is a tiny little card game that takes like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It was on tabletop. The harbour game, and it looks fine. But yeah, it's similar idea, obviously, the fact that it's a harbour, but whereas Le Havre is actually kind of half realistic, not really, whereas The Harbour is a fantasy.
Because you are collecting and trading with resources.
Yeah.
But I think One of the things that I remember I enjoyed about Le Havre was it's that situation where you buy an initial resource, then you convert that into a more advanced resource in most cases, and then you're using those advanced resources to combine for victory points, if I'm remembering correctly.
Pretty much. Or maybe I should mention just very quickly, the reason why people say this is the best intro to heavy Euros, because normally with Euros, you've got a billion different things you can do. Mm. On your turn in Le Havre, you've got three things you can do. You can go to a building and do its action. You can build a building. You can take some goods for free. And that's it. Yeah. That's all you've got to do. There's lots of those options you can do, but they're the three things you do, and it's never complicated. And on your turn, there's always something, because there's always those goods to take. So even you're like, I can't really do anything, I'll just get some free goods then.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, Leon, talking about turning stuff into other stuff and then doing stuff with the stuff that you've just staffed.
Interesting.
One of the games on my list in precisely fourth space is Clans of Caledonia.
Ooh.
Which is a Euro all about, what, farming for fun and profit, turning milk into cheese and turning sheep into meat and turning
sheep into wool
and wheat into beer and milk into honey and all those kinds of things.
And whiskey in excuse me, whiskey.
We played it, Mark. Yes. You and I, with Charles from LFG, and a person, Adam. No, person whose name
Brendan.
Names escapes me. We played Hit Z Road with the year before. I really, really enjoyed this game. It has probably too many little tiny meeples. There are a squillion billion of them. Setting up's a bit of a nuisance. But the gameplay is pretty quick for, again, a relatively heavy Euro. I really enjoyed the area control side of it on the board, which I horribly, horribly failed at. I did enjoy the progression of your, I guess, your own little industry, where you were able to grow cows, get milk, turn that milk into cheese to then be able to sell for profit, or have a wheat field that you can then turn into something or something, or get more workers.
Or chop up your cow.
Exactly. So I really enjoyed that. I can see after repeat plays, you'd get the gameplay down to an hour to an hour and a half, which is pretty good for that kind of game. So that was number four on my list.
I didn't assign it a number, but if I did, be towards in the top three for sure,
I think,
because it was surprising because, as you say, it looks fiddly because there's lots of little stuff and you've got your home player board. It is lovely how everything fits on your home player board, and then as you take it off and put it onto the board or do other things with it, it reveals information, much like the Scythe player board or other great player boards, where they convey information by the fact that there's not something covering them.
Indeed.
I had a lot of fun. Yes, the setup is fiddly, but the area control, the moving around the board, I really enjoyed that part. You're getting a lot of victory points from that. You're getting a lot of victory points from the commerce of buying stuff and selling stuff, and there's a market you trade into and you buy and sell and it moves up and down. When I looked at it, I thought, yeah, this is going to be interesting, but I'm probably not going to like it.
Yes.
And we played it straight after Montana
It might get a mention and another
fair
list.
Fair enough. So, look, I want to say Clans, I absolutely loved it. While it's with me, I will talk about the game we played. Was it the end of the first evening or
maybe
second evening?
Once you say the game, we'll probably tell you.
The game is called Raise Your Goblets.
Oh, okay.
Of course it was, Mark.
Yes. And taught to us by our lovely friend Renee.
Hello, Renee.
I reckon it was the end of the first night, because you were in fine form that night.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm pretty sure that you were in charge of getting the last bottle of ginger ale.
Yes.
While we were playing that game.
Fine, okay. So raise your goblets.
Oh, that's right.
You've got big plastic fantasy goblets in front of you, and you're trying to basically poison a particular target of someone around the table while you yourself don't get poisoned. You've got these glass drops which represent wine, poison, or antidote, and you're basically taking your turn, and there's a range of actions you can take, putting stuff into your cup, putting stuff into other people's cups. They're lovely deep cups, so you can't see into them, unless, of course, you take the action, which is, I'm going to look into my cup.
Mm-hmm.
You can swap cups with other people.
Change the bases of the cups so that,
that had a coloured circle on it.
It's good.
Again, looking at this, it's like, yeah, this looks like a little bit of fun. This would almost be my number one. This is, this was my dilemma. Is this really the best game? I had so much fun with it.
And yes, since Renee is going to be at LFG this weekend, it is worth mentioning that he has become the king of knowing these games that for some reason we have never heard of. Yep. And that are really good and really, and or normally have really interesting pieces and stuff in them. I don't know how it does it. I think he has like a equivalent of the Dice Tower, but on the dark web that we don't know about, because I can't think of any other way that he figures it out.
Yes, Leon.
Anyway, so they, those three I just mentioned, they were my main three. So nothing else even comes close to those. Anything else that was really, really good was stuff that I had already played before. So the Luchador game, which again is the only good wrestling game in all of board gaming world, which drives me up the wall. But sure,
it's good to have one.
We had great fun with that. Time's Up. We had a custom game of Time's Up where all you need is some cards and to write down something that everyone should hopefully know. Unless you want to be really obscure and kind of half ruin the game.
And no, a few, not pointing at anyone in particular.
And a few pencils and a 30-second timer, which everyone has on their phone. I did that two nights in a row, the Saturday and the Sunday night, till about 2, 3 in the morning. And as a party game goes, it's one of the absolute, it's one of the Mount Rushmore of party games.
Yep.
And it always will be.
Indeed. So, look, I will go up the list from 5 to 4. Mm-hmm. We're now at number 3 for those of you playing at home. This is a surprise for me. We've already talked about it, but it was Quacksalber von Quedlinburg.
Yeah.
I was so impressed with this game. I got to number 3 on my spot. You're all rival doctors trying to make the most exciting potions before they explode in a explosion of rat's tails and mushrooms and scorpions and all those kinds of things. That great element of push your luck, the fun element of drawing stuff out of a bag completely blind, the fact that it plays bloody quick, and for this kind of German, not Euro, but game that looks a bit weird, I was really impressed with it. And I think, Mark, you had some fun too.
Yeah, look, I had a lot of fun. It didn't make my top 5, but that's just because there were so many great games.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, just name drop here. I did an interview last night with Matthew Dunstan, and
Think
we'll be having that coming up on the show in a couple of weeks. He was surprised. He had never played it.
Okay.
He didn't really know what to think just based on the name. And when I told him about it, he was like, oh, that sounds fascinating.
Mm.
So, yeah, I had a lot of fun with it, but it didn't make my top 5.
There you go.
I'll tell you what I did, though. Raja of the Ganges.
Yes.
And this was one of the sort of middleweight Euro games that I'd heard a lot about. There was a lot of buzz about that I really wanted to try. It was sort of that and the game we're going to talk about after we go to the next break.
Yes. Well, the Rajas of the Ganges was definitely the game of the con for a lot of people, considering
ever.
The fact that there was about 10 copies there. I was there going, the game I really wanted to play was Heroes of Land, Air and Sea, because it was on Kickstarter at the time for that definitive version with everything. I was like, surely someone will have a copy of it. Nope, but there was 20 copies of Rajas of the Ganges.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty fair to say that we don't need to do a huge amount of talking about this because it will feature as
Playing. You know, like dice placement, gorgeous looking board, lots and lots of things you can do. You know, you're spoilt for choice, and it is one of those clever dice placement games where ones are good, twos are good, threes are good, fours are good, fives are good, and sixes are good.
What about sevens?
Sevens are so potentially good as well, actually.
Interesting.
Even up to 12s can be good. Look, it was on my list as well.
Yep.
So I think the brands, Inca and someone
Marcus,
brand, who had done what? The Escape
Rooms.
And
Escape Rooms.
That one. And Village. So they know how to design games. It was certainly very high on my list as well. Leon, do you have any others, or have I got one more and then we'll go and throw to a song?
You're good, Garthy boy. Get going.
The other one that I will mention, we spoke about it just the other week.
I'm presuming it was on your list and mine.
Yeah, Flamme Rouge.
With Peloton.
We had an absolute ball with that one. I was thinking there was one more. Oh, one more I did want to mention as an honourable mention. Probably I'd rate it 6 because the other 5 I couldn't decide. Again, it was Renee on the last day.
Oh, yeah, it's on my list as an honourable mention
Renee sitting there with this game with lots of little funny wooden, funny-shaped blocks, looking like he's building a building. And I was like, what's that? And he said, I sit down. World Monuments, it's called, where you can build the Taj Mahal or the Capitol building in the US, or all sorts of sort of famous buildings with these multicolored blocks. And there's a whole mechanic of you go around, you draw a few pieces each, and then you're trying to put them down, and you score points based on what level they're on or what they're adjacent to.
Yeah, and the colour of them and a few other things. But, yeah, no, I was really impressed with that. That made my list for an honourable mention as well. Two other ones, because I was the only one who hadn't played it. I really enjoyed my first play of Century Spice Road Golem Edition, which was also played on that morning. And then I want to do a shout-out for Drift Kings, working title.
Yes.
Yep. James Allen's game, which will be coming out to Kickstarter at some point.
He'll be at LFG this weekend.
He will be.
I am hoping to actually play a game.
I was really impressed with the demo that he put together for us. The game looks sweet.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how that progresses and what it ends up being the final product. Anything else, guys? Or are we ready to throw to a song before we come back and talk about yet another game?
I'm all good.
Okay, let's talk about another game after this song. We're the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thanks to Area 52. We'll be back in a tick.
Hello, everyone. Sorry to interrupt, but it is your friendly neighbourhood Leon here. I just wanted to take a few seconds to remind our old listeners and to all our new that you can support the Dice Men Cometh on Patreon. You can jump over to thedicemencometh.com and there is a link sitting there on the front page. You can give as little or as much as you want every month, and we are very, very appreciative. I myself do it for several different podcasts, and a dollar or two comes out and I don't even notice. And I can tell you right now that if everyone listening to my voice right now only gave us a dollar every month, we would be very, very happy, lads. And every cent that you spend goes straight back into the show. We've been using it, as well as the advertising from our lovely sponsors, to go all around Australia to see you guys at every convention we can get our hands on, and hopefully we might even be doing it internationally soon, so watch this space. Also, you could jump over to redbubble.com and search for Dice Men, and you can get our logo onto all different kind of merchandise. We ourselves have them on t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups and stuff, and they're really cool, and that's another way you can support us as well. The show has grown leaps and bounds in the last year or so, and it is thanks to the effort and support of you lovely people out there. You keep giving and keep giving us material, and we will keep doing the show. So, love to all of you, and now back to the action.
Look out! Well, thanks, Mark. That was the President of the United States of America with Peaches.
I love that album.
Clearly, judging by your perfect outro for that. Dice Men Cometh is us, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It is Area 52 as the sponsors. Thank you very much, Mark. You wanted to continue with some memories of BorderCon.
Yeah, well, we talked about our top experience, and I know we talked about some of our more interesting experiences, but probably what we haven't spoken about was, I don't know if I like to say the worst games we played, but I guess the games we didn't enjoy the least.
The most.
Didn't enjoy the most.
So before you go into an explanation that's not going to make any sense, how about you just tell us something that may not have been the most fun that you had for BorderCon?
Sure. So I'm going to mention The Mind.
Ah.
So obviously, you know, a lot of buzz, people talking about it, been nominated for the Spiel des Jahres, and I thought, at least I have to try it. I couldn't see the attraction, but I wanted to try it. It fell so flat. And I just thought, this is an activity, maybe. There's no game in it at all. It can't possibly be considered for an award. And look, maybe after playing it a few rounds, I started to see a little bit of what people might be able to see, but really, I'm not there.
Leon.
Cool. So I played a little card game called The Fear, which is in that, what's that line actually called from that publisher?
Freedom and Fortress line?
Yeah, that has all those games. Either way, The Fear, it's a game where they actually do something we're big fans of, which is they teach you the game as you play it. Cards come out and they change the way the game plays and whatever else. But I know it's not the be-all, end-all, but replayability is an important thing, and there is literally minus of that in this game, because once you've played it the once and be like, oh, okay, so they're the rules, you'd never play it again because you know those rules are coming up. And as an activity, not bad, but as a game, why would you need to own it?
Well, it's basically really Friedman Fries's Flux Fear, because it was basically you draw some cards and then the rule changes and then a rule changes and then a rule changes and it's like, ho-hum, this is done.
Okay, as an activity, fine. As a game, no.
Yeah, and it's the fast-forward line. So there's Fear, Flee, Fortress, and then it takes something else from the other fabled fruit game. Too many Fs.
Anyway, it got an F from me. So my version for very disappointing was viral. You're all playing competing diseases, trying to most infect a human body. It has, I guess, elements of area control and deck building construction thing, and it was just really boring. Can we talk about something else?
There was a little bit of fun.
I didn't mind viral, but we played it with five, all of us learning for the first time, and it did overstay its welcome. I think at three or four, it could have been all right. But just Garth, not then and there.
All right.
None of us have mentioned probably what I think we all pretty much agreed on was the game that fell the flattest.
Easily.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because, Mark, you are in the South American highlands, somewhere between the high mountain ranges of Bolivia and Peru, an altitude of more than 3,000 metres, so not flat at all. It imposes tough demands on people who utilise the scant vegetation for their needs. The inhabitants generate continually growing wealth by fishing at Lake Titicaca, mining ore, breeding alpacas, might be a little bit of a hint of what game we're talking about, and trading goods that are produced from these resources. But beware, the resources are limited and some peter out at some point. Damn you, Peter. So that you need to build new production facilities early enough and shift to other resources of income, such as cacao. New production sites get built and you should not neglect to construct your road. That's needed to speed up your development. Additionally, you need to build a warehouse so that you are able to bridge the hard times that are not uncommon in this particularly barren region. If you do plan cleverly and are flexible enough to adapt yourself to the current conditions, you will have the highest yield in the end. And we are talking about Altiplano.
That sounded very boring, Garth.
Well, the thing is, it's by Rainer Stockhausen, who is the Orleans guy that I've written, otherwise known as the designer of Orleans or Orleans.
Yep.
It's by Renegade Games, a company that has produced a lot of big hits, and arguably this is one of them.
Yes, we have to simply state we are definitely in the minority. Other than Raja of the Ganges, this was the game of the con at BorderCon. It was on tables constantly, and people were big, big fans, just... not us three.
No, so this could be a classic example of wrong game, wrong time. Yes. It was our very first game of BorderCon. We had five people, three of them were here, who did not know this game and started by opening the box and reading a rule book.
Yeah.
Now, that in itself is not a bad thing. You set up the board, you have seven different areas that you can go to. You've got a mine, which will allow you to collect stuff. You've got a forest, a harbour, a farm. You've got that road that they talk about. You can go to the village, you can go to the market. You can even buy extension tiles. And you've got your own player action board, which also comes with a warehouse and a wooden cart and a bag, which is incredibly important.
And it's got lots of symbols on it. And for some reason, it's very, very complicated, even though it shouldn't be at all.
No.
This game does have a great first player marker, though.
Got to it give does. That. It's a nice little, 3D alpaca, indeed. Which people thought was a llama.
Yeah.
But clearly the way to determine first player is who spits in whose face first.
Yeah.
Just like an alpaca.
Mm-hmm.
No, a llama.
No. Mark, you had something to say.
Oh, I was going to say, I really enjoyed that first player marker.
There you go. Yeah. Was it one of the highlights of the game for you?
Definitely was.
But so, look, this game is the bag-building mechanic that, obviously, Rainer Stockhausen has become very well known for and is sort of that, theme du jour. It's coming out and becoming a bit more important.
It's a cool idea.
You've had deck builders, you've had dice construction builders, and you've now got the bag builders.
Yeah, and the quack. Of Quedlinburg, they're obviously a very like an opening level bag builder.
So look, on your turn, you're simply going to draw out tiles blindly from your bag. You'll then place them all players simultaneously will place them on their own little action boards, and this is sort of your planning zone.
And when we say tiles, we mean
little tokens.
Yeah, tokens.
You draw them out, and you're allowed to draw out a number equal to how far down the road you are, and that's why the road is important. That's all done simultaneously. Then, once everyone has drawn those, simultaneously, all players will assign whatever tokens they've brought out onto their own action board to say what actions they're going to do, which will then allow them to move their meeple on those seven different areas, the mine, the forest, the harbour, the farm, the road, the village, blah, 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 to convert whatever resources you've pulled out of your bag into other resources. So you might go and spend some rocks to get ore, or you might spend an alpaca and some food to get wool. So there's all this, you're building and getting more tokens, which will then allow you to drag them out of your bag at the time is right. And you're basically converting basic resource tokens into slightly better resource tokens, which you will ultimately either store in your warehouse or get orders. you'll try and fulfill orders, and the orders are generally going to give you lots of points, but you've got to have the higher end resources to do those with.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, potentially sounds fun. It's all the problem is the first half of the game.
Yeah, it's actually kind of very similar to Le Havre, funnily enough, in the fact that you're just gilding stuff to get more stuff to get points, except that Le Havre has been out like 6-7 years and is twice the game of what this is.
Yeah.
But we do have to say that when we did play this, it went long. Oh, it went long.
It was at least over 3 hours.
3 hours, which it should not have been.
No.
And the last hour was... all right.
It was good.
It was all right. I wouldn't even say good. The last hour was all right. But those first 2 hours, which is just us wrapping our head around, for some reason, just none of us, and four grown men that have played many a game, just couldn't wrap around a lot of the ways that this game was trying to make us work, and it just couldn't. Those first 2 hours, oh, God.
It's a bit of a slog.
What a struggle.
Yeah, and really, we were almost drawing out every single chit we had.
Yeah.
Each time, so there wasn't much of a build up. It was a very, very slow burn, and there is quite a circular way these things, because you get those advanced resources, but there are ways to then turn those advanced ones back into the basic ones, which sort of seemed a bit strange. I mean, it's almost like you could almost turn anything into anything else going via a third or a fourth thing.
Well, for a game where the alpaca is on the box. The alpaca is the first player token.
Yeah.
And you would think alpacas. I went through the whole game without having one alpaca token.
Yeah, nor did I. And I was rather pissed off about it.
Language, Leon. So, look, we don't really need to talk too much about this. It certainly fell flat for the Dice Men. Look, I'd give it another shot just to try and get some fun out of this. But the joy was certainly taken away from us very, very quickly because it just took so long to get interesting.
And maybe we needed one of our great friends, someone like a Richard, who does such a great job of explaining games.
Yep.
You know, with Raja, same thing, we didn't know, explained it so well and when we got into it so easy. Whereas this, we, as you said, we took an hour and a half to really understand how it was working. And by that stage,
we'd
sort of lost interest. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, can't remember who won. It probably wasn't any of us. And that's was our first game of Bordercon. Yeah. So the great thing is it got very much better after that. So Alpaca in Altiplano, not so much fun for the Dice Men.
No. Play Le Havre instead. It's better.
Yeah.
And I have a copy now. Come around my house.
I'd like to play all these,
though.
But
I'll be at work. Yeah, I mean, I'm the same.
Still love to play all these.
Got to get Orléans to the exactly. table so, to compare look, it.
Welcome back, Garth. It's good to have a proper show rather than last week's right. debacle, yes, I must be said.
And I have to get this way now and apologise to our lovely fans and listeners out there that I will probably be here a bit less these next 6 months or so because my work schedule is... What are you going to say, Mark? very, very funny. Yeah. But as always, we've said a million times before, you can catch us all on your social medias, on your Facebooks, which we are always on and always will answer any message you send us, and your Instagrams and your Twitters. We don't put the same things on any of those, so feel free to follow us on all three of those things. I'm sure you can find us. Or you can just go to thedicemen.com and got every little link there.
And if you're in Sydney this weekend, Friday the 13th to Sunday the 15th, Mark will be at LFG playing games and wearing his Dice Man hoodie and giving away some dice. Hopefully we are out of here.
Oh, yeah.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Man Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support The Dice Man, and you can too, at Patreon for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.